Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Get ready, Ohio. FanDuel, America's number one sports book, is coming to the Buckeye State. And to kick things off, you can get started with $100 in free bets as an early sign-up bonus. Plus, when you sign up today with promo code OHIOFD, you'll be all set when FanDuel goes live in Ohio. Then you can bet on all your favorite teams in all your favorite sports with $100 in free bets. Just download FanDuel's top-rated sportsbook app. It's safe, secure, and super easy to use. Ohio, this is your chance to get in on the action. Join today with promo code OHIOFD. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 or older and present in Ohio. Bonus issued in non-withdrawable free bets that expire 7 days after FanDuel accepts its first real money sports wager in Ohio, 1/1/23. Unique user identity verification required. Offer ends on the go live date. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Okay, buddy. Nice and simple this time.
In a world of Veltema fungicide, 5 feet reigns supreme.
Hey, remember? Less dramatic?
5 feet.
Just 5 feet.
5 feet.
Nope.
60 inches.
Look, man, just say Veltema fungicide lets you treat corn as early as 5 feet.
Nice. Veltema fungicide from BASF. Coming sooner to a field near you.
Always read and follow label directions.
Nobody builds 5G like Verizon builds 5G. Because we're the engineers who built the most reliable network in America. And the more you do with 5G, the more building it right matters. The more your network matters. The more Verizon engineers going the extra mile matters. It's us pushing us. It's Verizon versus Verizon. 5G built right from America's most reliable network. Most reliable based on rankings from RootMetrics second half 2020 U.S. report of 3 mobile networks. Results may vary. Award is not an endorsement.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. In the middle of draft season here, we continue on with the offensive tackles tonight. And joining me is Jason Wolbert. Jason, how you doing, buddy?
Pretty good. Between my first and second vaccine shot, looking forward to starting to go out to sporting events again.
Yeah, me too. Had my first last week, a week ago, and did you get the Pfizer version?
I did, yes. I got the Pfizer version. Of course, there's not a whole heck of a lot out here in the Asheville area. There's the Asheville Tourist Baseball Team and Bristol Motor Speedway, and that's about it.
All right. Oh, in terms of other athletic events, I'm thinking of competing with your desire to get a vaccine, you would have these other events. Okay, let's move on here. Jason, we appreciate you being, you're at 25 Nuggets on Twitter, right? At 25 underscore
That's correct, Nuggets. Yes.
All right, good
and
follow.
I am beginning my slow burn of building up reputation and following.
All right. And we have the draft coming up, and you're certainly a guy who's a lot of interest in the draft, and we appreciated you being on the show in the past, and look forward to this discussion of offensive tackle. Now, offensive tackle, not a position where we would have figured the Ravens have a need last year. Now, it really looks like a need for multiple reasons.
Yes. I am of the belief that they need to take advantage of this particular offensive tackle class, which is a good one. And maybe even get two if they can accumulate enough draft picks. You know, EDC likes to do that, trade down can.
So if they got two, they'd be getting a guy who can play right away and a developmental guy.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes. One guy that will eventually take over for Orlando Brown Jr., who wishes to play left tackle. And personally, I hope that they can kind of get a trade done before the draft instead of after the draft. But either way, whether Orlando Brown Jr. plays this year or not for another team, they are eventually going to have to replace him. And what better way to get to do that to get a head start?
Yeah, and in a fairly deep class, like you mentioned, I think there are a fair number of physical limitations in this class. We had a little bit of talk about that in the production meeting. But there are a number of guys, as always, in the offensive tackle position who are very clearly going to end up at guard in their NFL careers. And you know, it depends on who you look at, whether they're listed as a guard or a tackle. But a lot of these guys, they play tackle in college. And by the way, that's a lot of NFL linemen. And they're going to end up playing tackle in the NFL. Guard.
Right, in college, at least on the offensive line, the better players naturally gravitate toward the outside, towards tackle. And then with increased competition, they have to inside, which the Ravens have done plenty of times in their past. They've taken an offensive tackle in order to play guard.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to go through. Let's go through some of the players that are moving to guard. We can alternate on this list, but Larry Borum of Missouri has 33 and an 1/8-inch arms, which is too short for this. I'm not going to say that everybody has to be up in the high 33s, but you got to be a better player if you're going to be in the low 33s or anywhere in the 32s.
Exactly.
To play tackle.
Yes, and there are a few of those that are really good players. We'll get to them. Yeah.
Right.
Well, okay. So we have, I've got Elijah Vera Tucker, who most people are already saying he's just going to be a guard. But he did play tackle at college.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, that's USC.
Very legitimate one. And I agree. He stays there. Go ahead.
Jalen Mayfield. I started before watching stuff and taking a closer look, I started believing Mayfield was going to be the Ravens' first round pick. And he was going to start at guard and to tackle, but he tested very poorly. And he has those arms. He's going to end up staying at guard at the next level.
Yeah, I think 32 and change on the arms was what came out of his pro day, and that's not going to cut it. In my opinion, that's not the only thing wrong with Mayfield. I think that lack of athleticism is somewhat apparent in his play.
Yeah.
So I think that there are probably a few front offices who still believe he can play tackle, which means he won't be drafted nearly as high. And I'm sure he will be drafted, and he may be a fine guard in the NFL, or he may be at least a good guard in the NFL, but he's not going to play tackle. Brady Christensen at BYU has been thought of now at a lot of positions, but I don't think tackle is his eventual landing spot.
No, I believe that he could potentially be a draft steal because he is the opposite. He tested extremely well athletically, but like so many of these guys, they have they have the short arms, and we can keep rattling them off. Robert Hainsey, pretty much everybody on the Notre Dame offensive.
Yes, it's too short arm. That's exactly right. Jackson Carman.
Yeah. Jackson Carman.
Another player, good player at and he's certainly a taller guy, but at 32 and a half inch arms, I mean, he's got to play guard. But stylistically also, Carman is a mauler and will do very well at guard. It won't be a tough transition for him. It's just it's time to admit that's what he is and not a tackle.
Right. And just overall, like when I started the process, people were talking about like 24, some insane number of offensive tackles that are going to be drafted early and stuff. But now I have like 10 of them moving to guard because the arms, just overall, there are very few that actually have average to above average arm length. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, there are some really, really good short shuttle times. And that's something that really comes into play if you're a guard and you need that lateral agility and be able to move around, especially in zone block concepts, but also if you need to pull and such like that. So we still have a deep offensive tackle class, but we also have a deep interior offensive line class because of these guys that are going to.
All right. Well, let's start going through and we'll rattle off our top 10 the way we've been doing these shows. As you know, Jason, as you start with your number one guy and I'll fill in with my number one guy if it's different. We'll discuss each as we go.
Okay. So we're going from top down, number one. Mm-hmm. Okay. Number one, Penei Sewell is my number one offensive tackle, but I also have a 1A in Rashawn Slater. And these two guys are considered at the top of the draft anyway. They are both in that gray area arm-wise and wingspan of, you know, between 80 and 81, I think, inches. And that's not good when you're out there. The threshold for offensive tackles is generally 34 inches. That's generally what people consider as a threshold. Mm-hmm. But you can get away with shorter arms if you have that elite athleticism. Both of these guys have that. So I have Penei Sewell. I think he, from what I see on tape, the balance, the pad level, being able to get under people, getting to the second level, you're going to hear a lot of these getting to the second level. Mm-hmm. And finishing blocks and a lot of these athletic traits, being able to move. A lot of offensive linemen in this class have that. Good strength. Go ahead.
The point I'm making is there's so many positives about Penei Sewell. It really becomes a point of he's not even worth discussing anymore. This is a Raven-centric show. He's going to go in the top 7, maybe 8 picks at the very latest, I think. I don't see him dropping out of the top 10. The Ravens, if they traded every one of their draft picks, would about get to about number 11 if they wanted to do that, which obviously they're not going to do. And so as much as they would love to have a player like him, he doesn't fit into the Ravens' plans. It wouldn't even there's no team that would trade their pick for the Ravens number one and Brown that would get the Ravens Sewell out of the deal. And that's the way it should be, by the way. Yeah.
Cincinnati, he should not go past Cincinnati.
Yeah, he shouldn't, and he probably won't. There's going to be a lot of pressure on Cincinnati to trade that pick and gain draft capital. So it may be that Cincinnati says, you know what? I mean, there's some good players here, but we need a tackle, and we need a tight end, and we need these other things. So, you know, we can afford to drop 4 spots and pick up a king's ransom in picks. I hope they don't. I hope they have to make a choice on one of those players at number 5. I actually think that
they don't have much of a history of trading draft picks either.
Yeah,
the Bengals, they like staying put.
Yeah, we'll see if this is a year where they're willing to do that again. But you're right, they don't move around the board too much. Okay, so you had a 1 and a 1A you threw out there already. I'm going to respond to Slater. I think we're good on Sewell. The 33-inch arms are a problem for Slater, and it does not drop him off my tackle list, but it drops him down my tackle list, which probably means whoever gets him is really going to be thinking about, is he a guard or a tackle? Obviously, his feet are outstanding. Just the top top end feet, but they're going to be wasted at guard. And unfortunately, if he's on the edge, you worry about his length again, and you have those concerns. It would be a shame. His anchor, which is not the greatest, might be less of an issue at tackle, which is a reason to keep him there, but it's not a reason to make him a great top of the draft tackle prospect. So, you know, I see what some sources have done in terms of putting him right at the top. I don't believe he's going to be the second tackle drafted. We'll see, but I don't believe he should be. I think there's other guys who are better tackle prospects. And if that's the need, address the need directly.
If I had thrown him in, he would be probably third on my list. But he's just different. He's kind of like a unicorn. Or you know how, as sports modernize, we start losing positions. He's kind of a positionless offensive lineman. Could you imagine a team using him and moving him around the offensive line as the game progresses?
No, frankly,
I don't know if people are ready for that. I don't know if people are ready for that, but he could.
I mean, I think wherever he goes, he's going to be a lockdown Pro Bowl candidate on an annual basis who can play either guard or tackle as his NFL situation dictates, and I think he won't be moved. We had Marshall Yanda, and he could do so much for this team. He would have been the best player at four positions, and I could maybe even argue five, because I think he'd have been a great backup left tackle as well. But we already saw him play a whole season at right tackle at a Pro Bowl level.
Yeah.
And then moved to left guard when he was hurt and play extremely well for the rest of that season.
And just like Sewell, there's no way he's making it to the Ravens. So
yeah,
you can just forget about him.
I actually think it's not impossible, but you're probably right that somebody takes him as a guard before 27, even if they maybe kind of still hope he can play tackle. So we'll see. Anyway, go with your number three, whoever is next on your list.
Two.
Since we've covered him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I set Slater aside. So my number two tackle is Christian Darrisaw of Virginia Tech. Darrisaw is your classic style left tackle type prospect that would have been thrown in last year, I believe, with three of the four. From last year at the top, in some sort of maybe just behind them, but I see I saw a good low stance before the snap, indicating strong knees. He's able to drive his assignment backward. He just engulfs smaller rushers.
It wouldn't be the run game where I say, if you're talking about driving his assignment backwards, I assume you're talking about the run game primarily. It's not the run game where I'm really concerned. I'm concerned about his ability, even after some time, to be beaten by speed. And he's got average height for a left tackle. So one of the problems with gigantic Villanueva, Spencer Brown size left tackles, McKinney, is they get beat by speed in part because they're too tall, not just right. Because of length. Well, he's got fine measurables in terms of his size. He's 6'5", 314, just average. So for him to get by as being not the best feat in the class, he needs to be a push a guy to the back pylon of the pocket guy like Rick Wagner was. That's not actually ideal on the left side. So it could be he ends up on the right side despite these positive measurables. And I could see him over there. I don't think that would be a terrible spot. It does reduce his value slightly if he ends up on the right side. And that's why I couldn't put him as my number two guy, but I have him at number four.
Number four.
Okay. Still love him. Still think he goes in the first round.
I think he could be scheme specific in terms of being part of a zone running team. In which case, I suppose it doesn't necessarily matter for a zone running team if they could go either direction, to be on the left or the right side. I have a note here that fair agility, not great. Mm-hmm. But it's like, I don't see any severe flaws. He may have some average traits, mm-hmm. but there are no actual, like, big time negatives, no big red flags. So who's your number two?
Okay, so my number two guy, Alex Leatherwood of Alabama. I like him, and it seems like I like him more than a lot of other people do. 6'5", 312, 34 and 3/8 arm lengths. That's really not the reason. Had a very poor bench score is a red flag. It's so bad, I don't think it can be explained by slightly above average arm length for a right, for a tackle. So, you know, you see some of the explosiveness there in the trait measurables. He does a good job using that length to block to the back pylon. He really is not a mirror up his assignment guy. He's a cheat to the inside, push to the back pylon guy. I think it could work at left tackle, but I think he's another guy that I think ideally would move to the right side. I think in a lot of ways he fits the Ravens. So because of that, the Ravens ask much less of their offensive tackles. So if you have Leatherwood, you have a guy who plays left on in an emergency, plays right primarily as his job, and he could really do the job with his physical assets over there, I think. And the right tackle position, the Ravens ask much less of that position than just about any other team in the NFL.
I think he could be a fantastic right tackle for the Ravens. I've got him fourth on the list.
Fourth,
I think
good.
People are. I do. I think people are sleeping on him a bit. Mm-hmm. I think you were talking about arm length. He's got one of the best wingspans at 84 and 5/8 inches of the available prospects. And big, long legs. He can just plant in the turf. I saw good lateral movement, and I saw that he's intelligent. He can recognize twists and stunts and block both of them sometimes. And I noticed that sometimes he let his assignment get into his body where he lost leverage on a play. And also you wonder about for the Alabama offense, it seemed like he always had a tight end next to him.
Mm-hmm.
So in that regard, if he moves to right tackle, then he'll still have a tight end next to him. So he'd be comfortable with that.
Well, he would in the if we're talking about the Ravens offense, he's not going to be asked to block the edge rushers on a fair number of plays. So all he'll have to do is make a down block on the defensive tackle, which is about as easy as you can do. Move up half a level, hit the scraping linebacker. It's really a very easy set of responsibilities relative to putting that right tackle on an island or even with a tight end. Sometimes tight end gets in the way on the right tackle, making an effective block or knowing exactly what to do on that right side. He'd almost rather be on an island, but in any case, he would be in the Ravens offense with the amount they run. He'd be much less on an island as a run blocker, with what they do.
Right. Well, if in the event that he falls into round two, I don't think he will. I think some team that knows what they're doing is going to pick him up before the Ravens get to their second round pick. But in the event that he does, I'd be depends
how far
on what
would
the
he have to drop
like
into round two, because trading back is one possibility.
Yeah. You know what? Trading back, what I would be trying to do is trade back to the end of round one, try to get the 31st or 32nd pick, because that's more valuable these days with the fifth year option.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, Leatherwood is one of those guys where it would be great to be able to trade back, peel back 6, 8, 10 picks if you can still get them. And then you have that extra third, fourth rounder.
I mean, that's the scenario where the Ravens trade Orlando Brown, probably. They don't trade number 27. They trade Orlando Brown to get back to 31 with the Chiefs is a possibility. And then they draft somebody, some tackle who's on the board on draft night. So they say, okay, we're willing to take that risk, take some change on the back end, and they've got a multi-year solution rather than Brown, you know, being a year away from leaving Baltimore. So I think it's still possible Orlando will be traded on draft night. I just think when that team gets to pick, there has to be a tackle on the board that the Ravens like enough to make the trade.
And the thought of trading into the Chiefs is scary.
It does suck a lot.
I honestly would be happy with a high second and an additional pick. I'm really not that. I'm not averse to that. If they do the Jag, somebody else, Jets, somebody high in round two, and then get an additional mid-round pick.
Well, pick 33 has extra value too. 32 is good for the fifth year option. 33 is good for the overnight trade value. So they could get pick 33 for sure, and they could get, you know, a fourth round pick maybe from Jacksonville as a possibility. But anyway, I think there still are options where he gets traded before the day of the draft, but there's probably better chance that he gets traded on draft day.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So,
You're number three.
My number three. Okay. So we're in that area. We were just talking about leather. We're in that area where there are a number of people that are kind of clumped together for me, that are right tackle ish and are attractive prospects for the Ravens. And so Tevin Jenkins is my number three. Natural right tackle, been playing right tackle. Just mean. He's strong and mean. He had 36 reps. He finishes his blocks. He's always looking for more work. He's a technician with his hands and his hand placement. And he's a little bit short on the arms, like so many, but I noticed he knows how to attack his assignment's arms to like short.
Oh,
like he knows how to work
big time. Yeah. That's the first thing about very heavy hands. Just, you know, the defensive tackle is just making a move and almost going in slow motion to make it. And he cracks at him with a great move. I love to see that.
He's fun.
Yeah.
He would probably be the number one guy on the board at 27.
If thinking
about who might be there, I think he'd be the number one guy that I would draft. Me running up to the podium drafting Tevin.
Yeah. So if you do that, I don't really have a concern about him needing to play right tackle, but I think it's the more obvious position for him of the two. I'm much more impressed with him as a run blocker. His mobility is pretty good. He will be fine within the Ravens run scheme as being what he's asked to do is going to be limited. We don't have to repeat the entire spiel here. And I agree. I think he's a great candidate to be picked at 27. I'd be very excited by the pick. However, the board drops out. If the Ravens decide Jenkins is the guy, I'm in line on that. All right, he's my number three.
Is he your number three?
So you go ahead and number four.
My number four was Leatherwood.
Okay, my number four was Darrisaw, so we already went over that. So you're number five.
We flip-flopped him.
Yep.
Number five. Okay, my number five is Spencer Brown.
Okay.
All around, he's the most athletic prospect in this entire draft via testing. There are zero bad scores across the board that he has. He is the tallest offensive tackle in this draft at 6'8 3/8". Mostly played on the right side, right tackle. He, like Penei Sewell, like Rashawn Slater, opted out. And it's a lot of these guys opted out. And so it's a weird draft. In that regard, we kind of have like 1.5 drafts worth of players because for all these players that opted out, other people filled in their empty, you know, spots on rosters. So you have like this overabundance of players, but you only have like 3/4 of a draft worth of tape to look at because of, you know, you have so many people that opted out or have played 2 games last season and then others who, you know, so it's it feels pretty crazy. But anyway, back to Spencer Brown. Because he opted out, because he comes from a smaller school, Northern Iowa, the Senior Bowl is what I kind of had to focus on myself, where he looked just like the behemoth that he is on tape.
Yeah, he's one of the players who certainly helped himself with that. He's a metrics player, you know, and this draft, because of exactly what you said in terms of optics, in terms of the opt outs, I should say, is very much one of a tape versus metrics draft. And he is the ultimate metrics player. I kind of wouldn't be shocked if there's a team out there who takes a Colton Miller shot on this guy. And Colton Miller, he was not a failure for the Raiders, certainly. And I think if Spencer Brown is picked here, the name Colton Miller is sure to come up on the draft day broadcast that you listen to. Absolutely a sure thing, because he's a comp for him in terms of this outrageously athletic, tall, very specific left tackle or bust guy. That's where he's going to end up. There's one thing about him. He had 34-inch arms and still did 29 bench reps. Now, 34-inch arms, first of all, not that long for a guy who's 6'8". 6'8 and change.
Average. Well, for age 6'8, yeah, but average for an offensive tackle, yes.
Oh, it's what I consider to be kind of ideal for the baseline for an offensive tackle. But 29 right. bench reps with 34-inch arms is good. It's not fantastic, but it's good. A lot of the guys who put out outrageous numbers at guard, they have much shorter arms. And I'm seeing all this contradictory information about that, by the way, that it's not really easier to get more bench reps with shorter arms. Any weightlifting site you go to will tell you not true.
Everything, like I said, was insane. What was his shuttle?
4.44. A 7-second three cone, which is like what you'd want as a
7-second three cone.
Yeah.
I know. So not only is he tall, not only is he wide, he's got that, a little bit wider wingspan than his arms length would indicate. He moves around. So I have my first catchphrase I'm working on. I said his phone booth is a parking lot.
That's good. That's good.
His is so much ground that he can cover and negate people with. Because he's so high, I actually have a note, because he's so high, I wonder if he can get low enough. But he's got a good burst out of the snap. He's, like you said, I think somebody's going to take a chance on him earlier than people think.
Right. That is one knock on him, is the uprightness as a player. And if he plays left tackle, which I think that's where everybody would want him, particularly if you're drafting him high, then the concern is going to be that shorter speed rushers like James Harrison types are just going to get right underneath that shoulder of his, and he's not going to be able to react to that. So we'll see how it works out for him. I would actually prefer, if the Ravens were not the team, to take that chance, because I don't think the Ravens need to gamble on a metrics player. I trust their judgment to get a guy later and cheaper who they like, probably from perhaps from a small school. Gregory Sinat.
I can agree with that, because I think Brown is going to be drafted higher than where they would want to draft their developmental offensive tackle.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, so he was your number five guy, right? Okay, I'm going with Samuel Compsey next, and out of Texas, 6'6", 314, 33-inch arms are short for a tackle. It probably ends up him going to the right side. Again, he has the ability to use that length to push the guy with speed by the back pylon that I love. I've mentioned that, I think, on three guys so far, and it's the same kind of problems in each case, that there's some arm length issues or there's some feet issues. If you can make up with that, you're going to be fine. Combine metrics are otherwise off the charts. He did very well, did everything explosiveness and agility wise well. If you like Spencer Brown.
At Lowe's, we're your go-to for great gardening values every day. That's why we've lowered our price on select bagged mulch, now starting at just $2.88 a bag. Mulch helps prevent weeds and retains moisture. And when you put it down around trees, shrubs, and flower beds, you'll see how beautiful it makes your outdoor space. Just in time to welcome back family and friends. Shop online and pick up in store. Lowe's, home to the best part of summer. Selection and product availability vary by location. While supplies last, U.S. only, excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Because of his relative athletic score, and Spencer Brown, I think, was a 10.0 RAS score, then I don't know why Samuel Cosmi doesn't go higher than Brown, because his measurables also excellent. He's been tested in the Big 12 to a degree. Now, there's been, I've seen comments made about how everybody plays, you know, different spread defenses in the Big 12, and so the tackles aren't as challenged, but I don't really believe that's true. He has the quickness to do what the Ravens need him to do in terms of power reads, and he'd be an exceptional mauling force over there on the right side.
Cosby is my number six, right after Brown.
Okay.
I suppose maybe because I was able to watch more of Cosby than Brown is why I listed Brown higher. I got suckered for the athletic potential. I actually have a note here. Was Texas watches was the Texas watch too fast at the pro day?
Yes, that's a concern about everybody in this draft, by the way, is pro day metrics. Were they really measured properly? And, I don't trust most of them. I can tell you that. I really don't. There's a guy on the defensive line, Milton Williams, who, you take a look at his measurables. That's not the player he is on tape. If you looked at him, he's getting pushed around by these Georgia Southern offensive linemen. It looks ridiculous.
I mean, he's a guy that came on the last three college games of his career. but there you have it. Some measurables are harder to fake than others, you know, like your height is your height. It's with people there looking at you. It's hard to fudge your height or your hand size or your arm length or something like that. But these 40s and shuttles and cones, you have to wonder about. But regardless, big time strength. Similar to me, to Tevin Jenkins in that he's a Big 12 right tackle-ish, strong, block finisher. But I saw him get beat more than Jenkins on things like countermoves and such like that. I feel like I'm splitting hairs, but that was enough for me to rank Cosme just below.
That's fair enough. So I had Cosme at number five. You had him where?
Six.
Six. Okay. So who is your, you don't have a number six guy left on your list. And I had Rashawn Slater at number six. So who's your number seven?
Number seven is I have Walker Little from Stanford. Number seven. Another opt-out guy.
Mm-hmm.
The word that came to my mind for Walker Little is standard. He stays with his, I saw him stay with his assignment and finish blocks. He'll stay with his assignment when he's backing up or moving around. Just stays in front of him all the time. He tested moderately well, average arm length, average wingspan. I saw him capable of pulling from left tackle position. I saw good balance, fair agility, just consistency. Walker Little, in conclusion, is a guy that I believe in other draft classes would be drafted higher because the talent would be shallow.
He doesn't really have any obvious concerns. He's a pretty good mirror. Some people love him a lot more than we do. And I had him one lower than you because I know he's not my next one to name. Now I have him as number nine on my list. Mm-hmm. I love the size, and the arm length is good enough. The lateral mobility, I think, is confirmed from metrics to tape, which I like to see. I like to have, confirming factors and not a Milton Williams situation where lateral testing was excellent and, just doesn't know what he's doing on the field. He has some similar positive characteristics to Stanley in that I think he would give ground as a left tackle to stay mirrored. So Stanley does that a lot, it does a great job of giving ground in the pocket at the expense to stay mirrored with his opponent.
And I'm picturing that in my mind now. What you're saying.
It really works for the Ravens Jackson because he then has the mobility to leave the pocket when it needs to be done. And he's not allowing sacks. He doesn't have to be worried really about the Bryan side. He doesn't really allow very many quarterback hits either. I'm not saying he's not, partially responsible for some of those by allowing the pocket to be phone boothed from that size. That certainly happens with Stanley sometimes. But I that kind of a left tackle will help keep your quarterback healthy for a long time. And, you know, from that perspective, okay, I like him. I wouldn't be upset if that's who the Ravens end up with, but I think he's really only the ninth guy in the draft. And I think I'd want them to be trading down into the second round.
Oh, I was about to say, where if you're the Ravens, where
45
do you draft
to 50
Walker Little?
45 to 50. Well, that's
okay,
what I think.
So that means your ninth best guy is still in round two. So
yeah,
that's when it's that just speaks to the depth. That's what I was saying.
Yeah, it's definitely a great class of a lot of guys, some of whom are going to be playing tackle and some guard in the NFL.
Yeah.
All right, so let's go.
Okay.
You named your number. Seven. It was my nine. My seven was Spencer Brown, so we don't have to talk about him again. Who's your number eight guy?
Okay. My number eight guy? Okay, I don't know if this is the right pronunciation, but Dylan Raddins.
Mm-hmm. North Dakota State.
North Dakota State, my number eight. I didn't see anything wrong with him. The issue is, for him, the competition that he faced at the FCS, even in Senior Bowl week, you can put together a good Senior Bowl, which he did, mm-hmm, along with many other offensive linemen, but that only goes so far, you know what I mean? Because you're not integrated into an offense. You're just thrown together with a bunch of strangers and, you know, you cobble together some stuff, but He just looks good. I mean, he dominated the FCS competition he was up against.
And he should.
And all of the check marks. He checks all the boxes for me.
I would agree, and I liked him. I think he's on the border of the second and third round, probably a late two, as I would see it. One of the concerns was strength. I thought he did himself a big favor by getting 24 bench reps done with 34-inch arms. That's really pretty good. It's not a bad total. That is normal strength. It's mm-hmm, not terrible for 34-inch arms. The explosiveness metrics being good would help in a run offense. So depending on where he ends up, I think he has some good ability to help a team that runs more, and that defines the Ravens, of course. I think he's more likely a guy you want on the left side with those 34-inch arms and no obvious other problems, all things being equal, but he might be a guy whoever drafts him, he starts at right tackle with the hope that he would move to left at some point down the road when their current left tackle either leaves or retires or whatever.
Well, if you're the Ravens, are you happy just drafting him and parking him at right tackle?
I am at the right price, but I don't want to pay left tackle draft capital for a right tackle. So I want to get the distressed characteristic. Otherwise, you know, the other thought is, well, Brown could play left tackle and it really saved the Ravens bacon this last year. And Walker Little could do it. You know, if Stanley goes down and Stanley's always hurt, do you make a trade that includes Brown, gives you a pick you need to take a player like Little, and also some additional draft capital somehow, because that wouldn't be the one for one trade I'd make.
Bro, no. Yeah.
Yeah, would you make that trade? And then I think the answer might be yes on that. It would have to be the right place in the draft for that to make sense, and maybe reload for next year's draft with some additional capital, or maybe reload with some lower round picks in this draft. You know, if you could get a move down 15 spots and pick up a four and a five kind of thing out of it, maybe that makes sense. Yeah.
Okay. So that is my number eight, Dylan Raddins.
Okay. And he's my number eight also. So my number nine was Walker Little, but do you have a different number nine?
I do. Yes. Since Walker Little was seven, number nine, I have James Hudson, Cincinnati.
Okay.
James Hudson tested much worse than people expected almost everywhere, because going into the process, the idea was this guy was uber athletic, but raw. That's what I heard. But he didn't test very well. So I turn on the tape, and the tape looks better than he tested.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a good stance. I saw good flexibility, the ability to kind of contort his body when needed to. I saw him. He's another mean, nasty guy. He finishes blocks. He looks for work. I saw him with his head swiveling around. He gets to the second level, and he has huge hands. He has this kind of this rip move that where he throws his assignment down to the ground. I don't know if that's holding or not at the NFL level, but if they don't see it, he keeps his hands inside. He can just push people down.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he's still draftable for sure.
Yeah, I agree. And I think he probably ends up on the right side. What I really loved about him is he kind of looked to me like Orlando Brown did at times. So overly physical, so blocking to the echo of the whistle that he would make people angry. You know, the guy we saw this out of and his career was a ski slope was Michael Orr as a rookie, blocked to the echo of the whistle. He's a very physical player. I don't know why he changed, because he could have headed to a Hall of Fame career at right tackle if he'd played that way and grown normally over the course of his career. But all of a sudden, he got all caught up in moving to left tackle. He lost all elements of physicality to his game. And he just wasn't a very good player after that. Hudson is exciting in that perspective. The block that kind of reminds me of the way I see Hudson play and the way people get pissed off after the play about him was Orlando Brown's block from his rookie year at Carolina when he, I think I heard you right, yeah, 2018, where he blocked, I think it was Horton, all the way out of bounds. And then a player on the sideline had a personal foul retaliating against Brown for it. It was just one of these great plays. It's too bad the Ravens lost that game badly, but it was a beautiful play, and I love that.
Yeah. There's actually a similar play that people point to in this draft from Jenkins. Jenkins, I think it was against Osai. And he blocks him all the way out of bounds into the crowd. And you'll see that over and over again during draft shows.
Did it?
And Hudson is like that too.
That one is a block he finished, but there was no retaliation. That was the cherry.
No retaliation.
That whole thing. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. No retaliation that time. So Hudson is my ninth.
Okay. And I have Walker Little at number nine. So you're number 10 guy.
Mm-hmm. My number 10 guy. Okay. So here's my wild card guy. Dante Smith from East Carolina is my number 10. One of many opt-outs. Another opt-out. So, again, must rely on the 2019 tape and Senior Bowl. He may not have been noticed without a strong Senior Bowl, which he had. I'm not sure, but, I mean, he's not from a big school, per se. This is the arms guy of the draft. This is the 35 and a quarter inch arms, 85 and a quarter inch wingspan guy. So he just, you know, his reach is insane. So he tested average athletically, but, you know, there may be a reason for that because of his body type. I saw him be able to have the athleticism to be balanced enough, again, get to the second level. A lot of guys that can move and block their first assignment and then forward and block another guy, he can blow people up when he engages them, but he's expectedly raw. That's just what you have to expect from him. So
yeah.
I can imagine you putting him in the developmental category.
Yeah, he's in my developmental category. And I love him. I really do. In terms of that, the arm length I love. I think the 24 bench reps, same thing I would say for Little. This guy has even longer arms, and I think 24 bench reps is okay. With those longer arms, certainly at 35 inches, I have no problem with it at all. He's a little slow afoot. He's not the ideal guy in terms of doing things in level two, but he'd be great for the Ravens because the requirement is so little. You know, you basically have to patrol a very small space and make sure that linebacker doesn't get to the ball carrier in that C gap. It's really just not.
So I've heard.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, down block, guard that C gap. I think he can handle all that. And I think, you know, he will learn and probably be coached well to go to the back pylon with speed rushers, which would be obviously the problem you would see. But, you know, longer guys are typically the guys who can most easily push to the back pylon, use their length to make up for their lack of speed.
All right. So who is your 10th then if Dante Smith is not?
I left Liam Eichenberg on the list. Now, both of the Notre Dame guys, frankly, should end up at guard. But Liam Eichenberg was awfully good in terms of what he actually did. His 32 3/8-inch arm would scare me off for anybody. But now nobody's going to tell me that it's all about arm length and I'm, you know, being, it's in the bottom 10%. He is of offensive tackles, at least in terms of arm length. Mm-hmm. But he did play 3 years at left tackle, pro style offense at Notre Dame. There's no disputing that. By the way, if you look at the PFF stats for him, they'll show you zero sacks last year. I watched two games. He had contributions to sacks in both those games. So it's I don't believe that number, but his contributions are basically allowing the pocket to be crowded or phone booth. Length will potentially be an issue. Is that he may be able to be manipulated by a Myles Garrett in the division if he's playing left tackle, or where, you know, if he's playing opposite Myles Garrett, let's put it that way. I wouldn't want him, you know, up there in that situation. But then who really is great at blocking Myles Garrett all by themselves? You don't want that matchup for any tackle, right? So, but as a shorter arm player, you wonder about that. Is something I've heard it talked about that he doesn't punch well. That's the problem with short arm players. They don't punch well because they can't get all the way to the body. They can't dictate first contact the way that the longer defensive end can. The other part of having short arms on the edge is that all the players out there know that one arm is longer than two, and defensive players very aware of that fact. So we just watched a season where Ngakoue had some effectiveness, even though most Ravens fans aren't willing to admit it, had some effectiveness at using one arm, chopping the outside arm of the left tackle with that and using that to generate pressure at a reasonable rate. That's going to be a problem for Eichenberg at the pro level. But I do think there's enough there. There's enough of him as a run blocker. There's enough of ability to mirror there that I think he still could hang at left tackle. And he's really the most likely, I think, of the shorter arm players to be able to survive there. And that's why I have him number 10.
All righty then. So I guess in this case, we're moving towards the developmentalist. I kind of had just had them as honorable mentions, but
sure. Absolutely. We'll go,
I can
go
throw
one
a few
time.
Names out there. Okay. One Jalen Moore.
Good choice. Western Michigan, real good athleticism. That length is just average. What I like about Jalen Moore is he has tons of flaws. He has so much wrong with his game. He's so raw that there's a lot of correctability there. Now, we have no idea what his true level of performance is because he played in the MAC, frankly. So he should dominate those players, but there's so much correctability there that I think the Ravens coaches get to him. You might actually have a player after he comes out the other end. But he's not a guy I would draft very high.
MAC, low key. Some good running backs out of the MAC. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I mean, he's... like you said, he's a guy that could be. I'm curious as to where he's going to pick, because there's one particular draft board I didn't find him. I was looking for his name.
They didn't have him on the guard list, maybe, or what are they? What are they?
No, I didn't. I just didn't. It could have been a typo, but one that I wonder if the Ravens would draft is Stone Forsythe. What do you think about that?
Well, I think honestly he'd be about number 11 on my list, but he's definitely developmental. The problem is he won't last until the Ravens draft him. So he's going to go third round, fourth round, probably would be my guess. I've seen even higher estimates. He has the really good arm length at 6'9". I think he might even be taller than Spencer Brown. I have Forsythe at 6'9" and Brown at 6'8". And I tried to get my measurements from the NFL Draft Scout website so I could have one.
Same. I actually, I do that too. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe I misplaced an 8 with a 9, but I know they're both very tall and very tall and very long. And those are the two behemoths of the class. I have Josh Ball.
Mm-hmm. He's on my list as well. Off-field dating violence concern.
Okay, bye-bye. But somebody will draft him.
Yes.
Maybe Kansas City. But no, that's... they don't seem to have a problem.
They've had some problems. Yeah.
Well, they don't have a problem with drafting people. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Who's your next guy?
Well, I have a couple of bookend tackles from Texas A&M. We've got Dan Moore and Carson Green. Dan Moore has the kind of length that you're looking for, I believe, and kind of goes across. He's somebody I'm not hearing his name, you know. He's just flying under the radar, but he had a pretty successful career, actually, both of them, Moore and pretty successful career, blocking for some high-profile quarterbacks. So, and in the SEC against stiff competition.
I neither of those are on my list. I don't know anything about them in terms of arm length or anything else, but neither of them are on my list in terms of you know, being the top 10 or being developmental guys. So that's interesting. But if they, you know, certainly if the Ravens like them, I like them is what I'll say about this, particularly if they draft them late. I'll tell you who I'm going to love even more in this draft. I'm going to love any small school guy that DaCosta likes, because this could be a year where small school scouting really pays off for the Ravens. They've got, you know, a lot of those conferences they didn't play this year, but the Ravens were outstanding at doing their homework last year, and they may already have identified the guy or two and already be on lockdown order not to have those names even mentioned around their facility. That was the rumor with Bart Scott at one time, that they weren't allowed to say that name, but it's, you know, they go way down into the small schools to try and find people.
They really do. It's been a strength of their scouting department for 20 years. Unfortunately, we just don't know who they are. We might find out come draft day, but we don't know who they are right now. And the last guy that I have a note on is Landon Young from Kentucky. What are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, no, I like him. He's definitely one of my developmental guys. And the only other name I think that you didn't mention, let me just go through mine quick. So I had Ball being off. Tommy Doyle, did we talk about him yet?
No.
Okay, 35 and an 8-inch arms, Miami of Ohio. Bench press is a little... Yeah, another little bit unimpressive bench number, but again, 35 and an 1/8-inch arms, that may be a factor in coming up with, I think it was 24 bench reps, if I recall correctly. I have Alaric Jackson of Iowa on the list for a developmental depth. Now, he could go higher in the draft, certainly, but I actually think he may fall, and he might be a guy that you have as a guard tackle. He's one of those, he's kind of a tweener, probably is too short arm to truly play tackle, but he might be able to play, be your tackle as the first backup tackle that you have.
I can imagine him being a backup tackle, guard, kind of reserve guy, or maybe starting guard and back and reserve tackle. Yeah. He's beefy. He's up above 320 pounds. He's got the 32.5-inch arms, but he does kind of make up for that with a 83-inch wingspan. So he probably just has a really thick torso, I guess. And he did play in a lot of big games for the Big Ten. So, I mean, if the Ravens end up taking him, if he happens to fall around 5 or something like that, and they take him there, but he probably will be drafted higher than that by somebody, projects him at guard, I'm guessing.
Yeah, 20 bench reps for Alaric Jackson with very short arms is going to be a red flag for a lot of teams. A lot of teams are going to say that we can't live with that. I think Orlando Brown was at 15 bench reps, if I remember. Maybe it was worse than that. But, you know, most other teams basically said no, and that's why the Ravens got a big value there. The 20 bench reps, what it means to me is he needs to spend a year in an NFL weight room. So he's not going to be ready to play right out of the box here. I know a lot of people would, you know, if you draft a guy in the first couple of rounds, you certainly want that. But with him, you're going to have to be more patient.
Well, not as bad as Adrian Ealy, though. No. He came at 18 bench rep.
And he's a winner.
And I actually have a note.
33-inch arms also.
Yeah, I have a note. Okay, well, here's one that I don't know about him very much. Greg Island from Mississippi State. I have him with his 37-inch arms.
Wow.
And 8 bench reps.
Yeah. You know, I'm a big fan of arm length and all, but no, I'm thinking that's a no. But he's that looks like you have 6.079. Usually the last number is the number of eighths of an inch. So
I'm sorry. Yeah, that's 7/8. That's 7/8. Okay. So I can keep it numerical.
Almost 6/8.
Almost 6/8, yeah.
Yeah.
That's almost 11-inch hands. Yeah. But he's way down there as far as where he might be drafted. He might be an undrafted free agent.
Could be.
You never know.
You know, if that's how he got to the Ravens somehow and he works his butt off and they like him and they can either stash him on injured reserve or have him be not thought of very highly and on the practice squad, and then he gets his chance next year, great.
Yeah. All right. So all right. There we have it, I think.
I think so. I think we're through this whole thing. Really appreciate, Jason, you doing this for me. Jason provided an outstanding sheet, by the way. If you want to really ingratiate yourself, I've got the numbers, but I only pick the numbers I kind of want. And both Michael Crawford and Jason Wolbert provided outstanding spreadsheets of everybody's individual metrics, which are very useful in going through this this process. And it's nice to have all of them and not just the ones you picked out, just so you know some relativity with other players. But really appreciate you doing that, Jason.
You're welcome. Well, I needed it myself, you know. I learned a lot about, in this process, I learned a lot about what numbers you're looking for, what are the thresholds, what's average for the offensive tackle position, and then compared it to the tape that I saw, see if they were better or worse.
Yeah, it's a good process, I think, to sometimes start with the metrics and see if you agree that that's being shown on tape, because so many guys this year, these metrics don't make any sense with this tape. Good and bad.
Very,
a lot of bad.
Very important for this year where you have no official combine numbers. Right. Yes.
There you go.
Okay, well, Jason, thank you very much for having me.
Well, let's, a couple things. Jason, where can people find your work, for starters?
Yeah, I'm on the RSR message board as WNC Ravens fan. And I am active on Twitter now at 25_Nuggets.
All right. Good follow. Make sure you get that in after you listen to this pod. If you got a chance, good stuff to say. He's very interactive. If you have questions, does a lot of draft analysis. We're right in the middle of draft season, folks. We have a lot of things coming up. The next show we have, I believe I have the order correct on this, or it will be the last show we just had. You'll be able to get a podcast on a new valuation system. It's the Fitzgerald Spielberg valuation system, which basically uses the second contract as the method to evaluate how valuable individual draft packs have been from 1 to 256. And it's an interesting scale of much flatter valuations. It tells you some things that are probably going to make you angry about what you not lining up with what you think about the draft process, but it's always good to understand the basis of other valuation systems in there. He's a very interesting guy who works at PFF and had a lot of things to say. He's got a great article out there also that I highly recommend people go that combines analysis of age, cap, and PFF war by player and position. That's outstanding. So take a look it out there on the PFF website if you can, and then make sure you look at the gallery section along with the podcast that I'm referencing here with Brad. Anyway, thanks for joining us again, Jason. We appreciate having you on.
Thanks very much, Ken. And I will be listening to that podcast.
I'll talk to you next time on Film Center.
Nobody builds 5G like Verizon builds 5G, because we're the engineers who built the most reliable network in America. And the more you do with 5G, the more building it right matters, the more your network matters, the more Verizon engineers going the extra mile matters. It's us pushing us. It's Verizon versus Verizon. 5G built right from America's most reliable network. Most reliable based on rankings from RootMetrics second half 2020 U.S. report of 3 mobile networks. Results may vary. Award is not an endorsement.
At Lowe's, we're your go-to for great gardening values every day. That's why we've lowered our price on select bagged mulch, now starting at just $2.88 a bag. Mulch helps prevent weeds and retains moisture. And when you put it down around trees, shrubs, and flower beds, you'll see how beautiful it makes your outdoor space. Just in time to welcome back family and friends. Shop online and pick up in store. Lowe's, home to the best part of summer. Selection and product availability vary by location. While supplies last, U.S. only. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.